Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Dr. Lara Greaves this morning. Kia ora, Lara. How are you?
Morning. I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. We've got some topics that are hot off the press to chat about today. We're going to start with Putaki Bay because we had a chat yesterday with Marama Davidson, co-leader of the Greens Party, about this in depth, and she was chatting a little bit about the bigger picture stuff here, about how this kind of fits into a pattern of land rights and moana rights movements that we're seeing around the country. It's not necessarily a new thing either, and I wanted to get your opinion on this. We've seen some commentary from people like Kingi Snelga online as well, who's a lawyer and a commentator who's been linking the issues that we're seeing at Putaki Bay with things like Ihu Matau and Maunga Kea Standing Rock, where we're seeing legal processes that are prioritising one set of interests over Indigenous rights and perhaps treaties that exist in these areas. What are your thoughts around this? Is this something that you agree with? Do you think this is part of a bigger picture? What's your take on it?
Oh, completely, totally. And I can see that the Green Party has been a really good vocal sort of voice of opposition on this. And I'm seeing that through Chloe Forbrick appearing on shows like Marae, talking as the local Auckland Central MP, and seeing the Greens really, really push this. And I think that that's, yeah, what a Green Party kind of should do, really. And I just do generally agree that the process was not set up to protect Māori interests. But I think that we do have the potential for reform going forward, and I think Labor has signalled that. And so I look forward to see what they're going to do in that space. It all comes back to, though, of course, like what is adequate consultation with Māori.
Mm.
Recognising that, of course, like different iwi at different stages of power only recently settled. And so during this consultation process a few years ago, it would have been harder to get a handle on exactly where the iwi was at, although at any given time it's still hard to get a handle on that. I think that what really looks like happened here is, yeah, ultimately, I think a lot of the issue sits with Auckland Council and then saying who to consult with, and then that board that they consulted with changing in personnel anyway. And that just speaks to that broader process of maybe this next time round when we reform the Resource Management Act, that we co-design it with Māori and with iwi and hapu to try and get a really good handle on what that looks like for iwi and hapu as well, because we can't, like, even as sort of, well, I'd identify as urban Māori, but we can't dictate to them what the process should look like. They need to authentically say what that is in order to get the sort of mandate level that we need, and in order to not have them to have to spend 130 days or whatever it is protecting or protesting, depending on which lens that you take, their mana whenua, their, you know, and wahi tapu, their sort of sacred places, so...
So that's an interesting thing that we might be seeing some reform and some change coming through here. What would be some of your hopes? Obviously, a proper consultation, whatever that looks like, is actually quite a nebulous thing, as you've mentioned there. But what do you think would be some really basic first steps that we need to see in order to make sure that whatever change comes, it is actually genuine and coming from the right places?
I fully don't know how to do this, right? So this is like a really difficult thing to be able to get a handle on, because I also think that different hapu and iwi will be different, right, in terms of what they think will be adequate consultation. And then the moment that you do change the levels of local government or the authority of local government, that's going to change that relationship in that particular location between local government and hapu and iwi. So I think that that's where the really tricky thing is. I don't know. There tends to have to be a process of deliberation, but when we turn around and we want people to vote, that's starting to put that Western democratic lens on on sort of land rights and kaitiakitanga, and that's going to be a bit tricky to figure out the extent to which that you can marry Western consultative processes, like the policy co-design kind of literature and all that sort of work, and our thoughts on that, like Western thoughts on that, and you can marry that with what Māori thinking on this would be, recognising that Māori have now been colonised for hundreds of years.
Mm.
So the variational diversity within the group is quite broad. I think that it would probably be like a definitely more than just approaching a particular trust board and getting them to sign off,
yeah.
I think is clearly needed. It's also tricky in the situation where you have some, although it's the context has changed, you have some Māori disagreement as well, because then it becomes a matter of how do you resolve it if you did have a set of people sitting on a board that agreed with a decision at the time, and then you have them be able, are they able to revoke it at some point in that process? I think that that's some kind of mechanism that's worth looking at as well, given that we know that people are busy in their lives. Mm. We know that people barely get around to voting in local government, and that's incredibly hard, especially like for Māori, and especially for Māori that don't live in the iwi rohe as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's a group that we need to be thinking about in all of this. Protect Pūtiki have said actually some of their whānau are coming home for the first time and seeing their land for the first time, and that's something we have to consider in all of this as well.
Yeah, that's a huge conversation and goes very, very deep and broad as well. I did just want to get, before we move on to the next topic, I did just want to get your thoughts around something else. I found Kingi Snelga's thread on Twitter around this really interesting. He's also pointed out that there has been, I guess, this extra layer as well, where now we're seeing with Pūtiki things happening before the courts, and Kaitiaki from the Pūtiki, Protect Pūtiki group up before the courts. And we've also seen, of course, that this issue has gone through every level of the legal system here in Aotearoa. What happens when we get to this point where you're kind of at like a legal standoff, and you've got a Western legal framework trying to deal with an Indigenous conversation? This is similar to this kind of consultation process, but we're at the other end of it here. What do you think is like the way through this at the moment? Because it really does feel like an impasse with two groups who really don't want to move on something.
Yeah, there are a couple of things here. So one thing that I would say is that I find it really awkward in terms of trespassing and the notion, Western notion of trespassing, mm-hmm. and doing that for people when they're Māori, descended from a certain land. Like, I find that really legally awkward. And we're thinking about like the theory behind those laws and sort of Māori, te ao Māori views of descending from land. I find that really incredibly awkward, and I'm sure that we'll probably see challenges in that longer term around Māori returning home to Aotearoa and COVID as well. So I find that a really interesting area of law. Not an expert on that, but do find that really interesting in a space that I think definitely needs more exploration going forward. And it's great to see some awesome Māori colleagues doing tikanga in the law and progressing that area. It's great to see all that work developing in that space. The second one now is this creates a really awkward situation for MPs like Kitty Allen, who's viewed as being viewed as a popular figure in terms of Māori politics and just generally on the left, people going, oh, future Prime Minister, and, of course, we all wish her the best with her cancer battle. But it's one of those things where it's like she now is coming back. She's returning to work, and she's returning sort of as a conservation minister. So she becomes one of the people that groups like Protect Pūtiki go through, and, of course, we've got Nanaia Mahuta as local government minister. So they're the people who are like, they're Māori. They're very involved in Māori issues. And they become the people that the groups are appealing to, and then that creates that view of all the divisions in Māoridom, that kind of, that people are going to look, oh, it's like, yeah, we're all quite diverse and quite different, but that then creates those potential issues where it's like we've got these two quite popular Māori figures on the political left who are kind of going about their jobs and have potential to do quite and have potential for transformational change, right? So they're sitting there, but they've also got to keep in with the Labour Party and keep in with those centrist voters. So we see sort of things playing out, and this isn't just a necessarily Protect Ihu Mātou related issue. This kind of then goes back to the foreshore and seabed related issues, that technically the government or ministers could step in, and in the face of that government are these two wahine Māori. Then that becomes a bit of an issue in terms of who supports who, and like Māori voters and the Māori electorates are really interesting because they tend to be either Labour voters or minor party voters. And I think that we do have this potential to see a split within Māori voters longer term around people who do feel like, okay, this is settled, move on. The Mormons and Peters kind of kaupapa. And between Māori who still feel as though trees should be honoured and not settled.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about another protest that's been happening in recent times. This is the farmers' protest, or groundswell, I think they're calling it, that happened in the last week. A kind of an interesting one. We see, I guess, the intentions were there to raise issues around concerns about some of the new environmental regulations coming in for farming at the moment. But then it's been marred by a lot of quite problematic signage, some really racist imagery that's been presented at these things. What is actually happening here? What was the intention? And do you think any of that is ever going to cross over past some of this kind of muckiness that we saw in the last week?
Really, really tricky, this one. And I definitely want to point people in the direction of Sarah Bickerton on Twitter, Dr. Sarah Bickerton, who's a policy lecturer at the University of Auckland. She kind of discussed this, and I thought that it was spot on in terms of, so Groundswell New Zealand, she found that the document, the original document of what they were protesting, and it was what they were calling big stick regulations, so things around the sort of freshwater reforms, the significant natural areas, emissions trading scheme, all of those sorts of issues, and you can see, go through and go, okay, these are issues that, yeah, under, united under sort of big stick regulation. Now you can see from their perspective what they're protesting, and of course we always, you know, support protests. However, because there wasn't necessarily the clearest narrative coming through, that is where we did see a situation where a lot of the sort of more misogynistic signs or the sort of ones about Te Reo Māori were coming through in the press, and that was incredibly tricky for them. Like, they didn't unite behind, like, a groundswell is a really catchy slogan, you know. That makes sense, you know, on multiple levels, great. They needed to have more of that clear message in this, and it has been quite interesting, just as a side note, seeing how they're treated in media, in different media outlets, compared to the Protect Putiki protesters as well. It's an interesting study in contrast. But basically, it's ultimately one of those things where farmers are generally dissatisfied when we have a Labor government, when we have a left government. That just has been sort of a feature of New Zealand politics. When I was sort of searching the other day, I found Andrea O'Neill's piece for Stuff, tractor protests become a regular feature at Parliament, 150 years of news. So we've kind of had this, and if we remember back to sort of, I think it was an MP driving a tractor up the steps of Parliament for the emissions trading scheme.
I think it was Bill English, protest. Maybe.
And so it's like, that's always something that happens. That's always something that it's protested. So I think we're just at that point in the cycle. It's like how we're in that point of the cycle where we're like already starting to talk, oh, maybe ACT is the new central right party, maybe David Seymour is his preferred prime minister by people. You know, it's just this point in the cycle to me, I think, that, not to diminish their concerns, but that's what it kind of feels like.
I just want to really briefly, because we're running out of time, but I do want to get your thoughts on this. It's kind of related to that, a little bit to David Seymour as well, but some of the interesting reporting that we've seen around the news that the government is going to be funding groups associated with the mongrel mob to help with, rehabilitation programs for people in drug addiction. This is, it's like a, you know, classic sort of media flame, really. It's got all the topics to make a really sort of intense conversation that doesn't have a lot of nuance to it. What do you think are some of the things we need to take away just from, like, the getting past the kind of headlines and big sort of dramatic stuff out there? What is actually the crucial thing about this whole conversation? What's going on here?
Yeah, we definitely like to go, those people are bad, those people are good, those people are bad. And that's kind of almost what's kind of happening here in a way. I think that ultimately with evidence-based policy, which is something I'm passionate about and something that is generally good for society, although we can question what evidence is, we need to be thinking about what works, and it seems as though this pilot did work. There's precedent for this as well. Dennis O'Reilly and Black Power, for an organisation called CART, had been funded in the past for anti-P work, and I think theirs kind of didn't work out in the end, but and also work on domestic violence. I think ultimately it comes back to communities, whatever the community is, are best to solve their own problems with resources and support a lot of the time. So, like, it wouldn't be right for me, as aforementioned urban Māori, to rock into, like, a rural Pākehā farming community and just say, okay, I'm going to fix all your mental health problems. Like, that wouldn't be, that would not be the correct approach. It wouldn't be correct for me to go to South Auckland and promote vaccines to Pacifica communities. Like, we need to know that in ourselves, right, that we're not going to go and, like, save or help or fix other people, and that they need to be resourced to figure out what their own solutions are. That needs to come from an evidence base, and from what I'm seeing with this, it does, but it's that tricky thing where people don't have time to engage with nuanced policy and evidence in a lot of these conversations, so it becomes a heuristic, it becomes a binary, it becomes a mongrel mob, Black Power equals bad. But and at what point can a lot of those sort of lifetime members, they need to be able to, you know, solve problems for their own community. So I think that that's, something that's incredibly tricky, but incredibly important. And it's a shame that it's being caught up in this debate.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Dr. Lara Greaves. It's always great to have you on the show. Looking forward to chatting to you again in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Talk to you then.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with